What's going on, guys? Welcome to the show. Welcome back. It's another episode of the Preacher After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. It's season 2. It's episode 12. We're almost there. We're going to break this one down for you guys. It's titled On Your Knees. We'll see you in just one quick second.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Oh, I thought it was going to be louder. I was like waiting for the drop.
Yeah,
there we go.
It kind of snuck in there. It was subtle.
Yeah. What's up, guys?
Sneak attack.
How's everybody doing? How you guys doing?
Good.
Yeah?
You excited to be here?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
I'm happy to be in air conditioning.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness gracious. L.A. has been ridiculous.
It's been very warm.
Ridiculous. Yeah, it's. I literally left one side of town to go to my girlfriend's house because she had an air conditioner, and I didn't.
Yeah.
We spent the whole weekend just with an air conditioner.
Priority.
That was like
I know your girlfriend. I might go to her house, too.
So, yes, we are back, guys. It's Sunday. It's Sunday night. We are recapping the second to last episode of season 2 of Preacher. Is it Monday?
Yeah. It's Monday.
It feels like a Sunday.
It feels like a Sunday.
It's Labor Day weekend.
Labor Day. Yeah.
It's
right.
Monday.
Yeah, it feels like
Sunday. I like that.
I think I've said Sunday twice now.
Yeah. It's Monday.
It's
okay. Monday.
But it's Monday.
We keep it moving.
Yeah, it's Labor Day. Happy
it's
Labor Day.
It's whatever day you want it to be.
It is.
It's Preacher Day. So guys, this is season 2. It's episode 12. It's On Your Knees. We're almost there. We are almost at the end of season 2. And let's just sound off really quickly where the folks can find us and our initial opinion on tonight's episode. Matt Marr, what's happening?
What's up? Hello, everybody. I'm Matt Marr. You can find me at TheMattMarr or at MattMarr.tv. And I'm just going to say I was a little disappointed. That's all right.
Hey everyone, it's Nate Miller here. You can find me on all social media, Dog Like Nate. And for me, the episode, I don't know. I think my expectations were just a little bit high, coming off the high of how good last episode was.
Yeah.
And after that one, I didn't really enjoy it as much, but there was some nice resolution, I think, that was good to see. There was some redeeming qualities in
definitely
it for me.
You guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media, Twitter, Instagram, what have you. My opinion on this episode was that I think it's kind of a clunker compared to some of the better ones of the season. It's a little more reminiscent of some of the mid-season stuff last season, the early season stuff this season. What it felt like to me was there was a bridge between episodes 8 through 11 and episode 13, like where they wanted the season to end. And this was the sort of bridge episode they needed to get the stories to connect. Because as we can see from scenes from next week's Preacher, and also the way that things wrapped up and the way that the direction the story's going in, it's pretty clear they had an ending point, and to get us there, they really had to tie some things off this episode.
It felt like that.
This should have been like an episode, I felt like what happened in this episode should have been like episodes 8, 9, 10.
Or something.
It just felt really thrown together.
Yeah, and we've got Nate in the chat here, by the way, guys, if you want to sound off with your opinions. But yeah, it's always hard to say when you like a show a lot, when you're a really big fan of a show and an episode like this happens, because it's always hard to say. It's like, why couldn't I stay off my phone? Why couldn't I stay connected to this episode? Mm-hmm. Why did I find myself, it was dragging? And is it because we expect something better? Is it because the subject matter just personally didn't appeal to the three of us? You know, what is it? It's sort of crazy to me and hard for me to believe that the showrunners that do this show, that do such a great job with it, would approve this as the 12th episode. Like, it didn't have any really heart. Nothing happened that was exciting.
Well, mm-hmm. It felt like throughout the season, a lot of the things that we've been saying, we've seen over and over again, like, you know, Tulip's behavior and their interaction and the trio and their issues with each other, like, they've really been beating us over the head with them.
Yeah.
So at least in this episode, it felt like we got some resolution of that happening over and over again. But because we've seen it so many times, it's just easy to write it off like, oh, here we go, this conversation again. Except this time they actually reached some type of a point to it. But it just doesn't, you're just not as invested anymore. And that's what it was for me. It was like, oh, here we go again.
Right.
It was like the boy who cried wolf again.
So let's jump straight into that and breaking it down piece by piece.
Sure.
But I should remind everybody here of two things. Number one, we are not going to do specific comic book spoilers during the show. We save that. If you guys watch, you know this. At the end of the episode, we'll do a little sound off if we want to talk comic book spoilers. We'll be as vague as possible, anything that is comic book related, because that's not what the show's about. It's about the TV show Preacher. And last but not least, guys, I wanted to do one last thing. That's to give you a piece of news, an update here, something we have going on at AfterBuzz TV. We want to thank everybody here for the support, you know, for years and years and years. And we have a huge, exciting piece of news. So whether you're a longtime listener or you've been around for, you know, been or you're newer, we are expanding to content beyond just after shows. We're going to be doing a whole slate of new content, all new formats, all kinds of stuff. Shows that are going to extend beyond just the basic hour-long podcast after show format. We're going to do a whole bunch of other stuff. So
a plethora of stuff,
yes,
if you will.
The shows you guys are used to that you've been watching are not going anywhere. They're just going to evolve. Mostly, the shows are going to be on for part of the year, and then they're going to extend to be like a little bit more comprehensive. You know, we have always been TV show specific. We're going to be doing something that's a little bit more like the ESPN of TV talk. So Walking Dead, a year-round Walking Dead related show. You know, if you want Game of Thrones news in the off-season, you'll get it. We're going to break things down into kind of a whole different slate of the way we give you that content. I'll tell you about that in just one quick second. The shows are going to be divided up into multiple categories. That's comedy, drama, animated, and pretty much, you know, anything else you can imagine. The YouTube channel is going to break into 9 sections. So drama, comedy, reality, reality competition, wrestling and sports, animation, sci-fi, fantasy, superheroes, that's like the CW stuff, red carpets, and lastly, we're going to have an original content featured, like a featured original content AfterBuzz panel where you guys are going to get all kinds of cool stuff that we come up with here in studio. There's a huge amount to be excited about, guys. Stay up to date on it. If you want to sign up for our monthly newsletter, it's launching in September. You can check out our AfterBuzz weekly show with Megan Stetcher for news. And last but not least, guys, just stick around. You know, your participation, your feedback is what's going to help us do this well and help us through this transition. So stay tuned. AfterBuzz, exciting stuff happening. And I just want to let you guys know that before we get into this hefty episode of Preacher.
Good job on that, Ben Bateman.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. It's a lot of text, you know?
It's a lot. You got through it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot of information, a lot of new, exciting stuff coming.
It's huge. I've been here a long time, and I have to say, like, anytime they've ever tried something new and exciting, there's always a lot of good that comes out of it. So I think there's probably going to be something great that we can look forward to in this next year. A few things that you guys, if you are longtime listeners, you'll find that didn't exist before that are going to be great for you. So, and also, like, we're huge. AfterBuzz TV is so much content.
It's so much.
That if you go to the YouTube channel, it can be a little overwhelming at times to find the show you want.
Yeah, it's a little cluttered.
Yeah.
The organization will help much. It will help you find what you want to watch much faster.
Definitely. Yeah. So, that's the sound of me drinking water.
Hey, let's, I liked it.
Let's use that as the transition.
It made it feel intimate.
Yeah. So, let's talk about the trio. Let's talk about the trio of Jesse, Tulip, and Cassidy. So, we're only going to have this episode and one more to talk about them this season. And we have been moving towards this breakup of the trio for a long time. So as Jesse gets this information after everything resolves and he finds out, he really is considering doing this stand-in Messiah gig. And the question is asked by Tulip, Jesse, I'll love you till the end of the world, but why us? Like, why do you need us? What are we here for you for? And it was a nice juxtaposition because earlier in the episode, we had seen them as the kind of friendly trio again. Cass and Jesse having kind of a bro moment, which was nice. We hadn't seen that in a little while. You know, Tulip kind of accepting and excited to hang out. But we find ourselves in the same position where it's a little bit of like who the F is Jesse Custer? What does he think is going on? I mean, I don't get it.
I wanted him to say in that scene in the diner, I wanted him to say when she's like, why do you need us? Maybe he doesn't need them per se, but the fact, why does he want them there, like in his life? And if this is somebody you asked to marry, you wouldn't just have an answer. You wouldn't say, because I love you back. I mean, I just felt like it was, it felt a little trite.
Her saying that?
Of this, that kind of scene of his reaction to that, where he was kind of silent. But maybe he's thinking of like, maybe it's supposed to show us that, you know, that Jesse is lost, you know, that he is this kind of, he does think he's the Messiah and he's starting to think this. It was not the response I expected.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's weird. It's surprising because I don't feel like Jesse knows who he is.
We've said this whole season that it's been hard to like Jesse.
Yep.
They've been making it hard to, and so this to me was just even more just like, damn. You know what I mean? I'm like, who is this guy that, like, even though he had his, you know, his fallacies, like the first season, I loved him and he endeared me in a lot of ways. And so but maybe the whole point of this is that they're, you know, doing the whole, like, getting him lost per se, so that way he comes back to the person that we love.
Well, we talked about this a bit last week, right? I was saying that I think that there's an arc we're seeing Jesse go through right now, and I think that he's going to come out the other end of that arc it's not going to be the end of the show. I think this is his, the first bit of his story. He has to get through this bit to realize what the word and the power, what Genesis really means to him. Mm-hmm. He says it when he's at the table. This power came to me, not anyone else, me. And I think there's sounds like there's a God complex coming from when he says it.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
But also, he's right. There's a reason. He recognizes that.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a reason that it chose him. And so
there's a reason why when it chose him, he didn't explode like all the other hosts.
Yes.
Yeah, and so he has some responsibility to do what he believes is the right thing with that power. We're just seeing that he doesn't seem to have much of a vision of what that's supposed to be or who he's supposed to be. He's being led by a shadow organization. You know, he's mm-hmm. trusting them as this is the right decision, which, you know, that's not the Jesse Custer we thought we were getting into bed with when we started watching the show, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we talked about this a little bit in predictions last week, but I'm just hoping that he'll get there. And, you know, this one gave me some more predictions for what will happen in the finale and stuff. We'll talk about that later.
But yeah.
You're right in that hopefully we're seeing the start of this arc of him, you know, discovering who he is and who is Jesse Custer.
Right.
Because I think he's torn between, you know, like we talked about before, the person in his past that he was made to be and the person that he was trying to choose to be afterwards when he went back to being a preacher and that didn't work.
Totally.
So he's kind of like stuck in this middle. And that's what allows Harry Starr to be able to manipulate him to get him to believe what he wants him to believe, because Jesse doesn't know what to believe right now. Especially after he's made this revelation that they already missed God in the dog man suit. And just when he says to them, like, do I even want to meet a God like this?
Right.
You know, you can just see him questioning everything.
Totally.
And so for me, then it kind of makes sense that he would be able to.
That did make sense, actually. When he said that line, it was like, this has been like the, you know, the star at the top of the mountain that he's been pursuing. And now it's all of a sudden, now it doesn't shine for him.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. I was interested too how, I mean, we're going to see this, I think, in next episode. I was surprised. I mean, we've talked about some of our predictions that I really thought there was going to be a parting of the ways in the three of them. So they really, it seems a little quick.
Yeah.
That they're kind of having Cassidy and Tulip kind of like as a duo. I like it because I love those two characters together and the way they talk. Like, I thought the scene where they talk about who's in charge.
Yeah.
I love that. That was great because people don't talk about that on shows and the fact that they were.
Right.
So I am interested to see, like, especially next episode, and if it goes into how it goes into season three of what is this Tulip Cassidy relationship going to evolve into without Jesse.
Right. Yeah, totally. I think that it's really interesting that they're pushing us in that direction so early. We've talked about this a little all throughout the season that we were surprised that it seemed to be happening so fast. The moment where Cassidy and Tulip are sitting there and she says, like, let's go to Bimini, and he's like, just us, and you hear the heartbeat. Like, they're continuing to dangle that carrot. You know that shit's going to hit the fan with that at some point. It's just, when is that going to happen? And it definitely feels like as soon as it does happen, it's going to drive a stake into the relationship between Cassidy and Jesse. I mean, and Tulip as well, but like specifically that relationship. And I
don't think it's going to be this season, though. I don't. I thought it would. I predicted that. And now I'm recanting that.
I think the breakup of the group is going to be a separate issue than the love triangle problems with Cassidy and Tulip. I think that'll come later. It seems like they're going to break that up.
Hopefully the piece of music that they use for it is as great as the Breaking of the Fellowship by Howard Shore. One of the greatest songs of all time in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, The Breaking Fellowship. Anyway, back on tangent.
Agree.
That's something that they probably would use in universe.
Yeah, right?
That conversation got the rights to that.
They were having when the about Saint Fight was Club? In there,
yeah.
That was just, oh man. It's one of those, like, amazing things.
It was great, too, if you haven't watched that. Or if you watch that, I would say if you couldn't hear it all, I mean, we're wearing headphones,
but still, we
have closed captions. So I highly recommend getting the captions for that because it was pretty great.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Saint shows up. First of all, the Grail gets the Saint out of the swamp and they pull this awesome bait and switch with the, you know, with the truck. They give us a lot more Saint of Killers backstory. You just see more scenes and more of the stuff. And
someone in the chat said that they felt like that was unnecessary and that they didn't need to see and it didn't add much, and I agree. Like, if they hadn't gone back and replayed that stuff so many times before already, maybe, but like so much of it was there was a little bit of new footage in there,
a little
bit,
but
like 80% of it was just more and it's like, we know what happened
because we got so much of that before.
That was a big energy killer in this episode.
I agree. And the Saint story in general, they like the way that they tried to, so they tried to give him a little bit more humanity in this episode. It wasn't just that story of him with Ratwater and the whole like go across and 3 days and all that. They showed the conversation with him and the daughter early on. Like he's living his he has a part of a soul now, I think, which is why you're seeing a little bit more of the sweet memories mm-hmm. instead of just the piece of hell that he had relived mm-hmm. over and over again.
He's got a little bit of his humanity.
Back, something. Kind of. And he feels like a little bit more of a humane character this episode, even mm-hmm. if it's just 1% soul.
Well, even the fact that they're able to negotiate with him and, you know, yeah. he doesn't rip him yeah. apart.
But here's my thing is I think the unkillable nature of this character... It's kind of like with Superman. The issue with Superman as a character that like for Superman to win, he doesn't have to just try hard. He'll win if he tries really, really hard. Like that's always been something people say. And it's anytime you have a character that's effectively unkillable, unstoppable, it's really difficult to balance your expectation for their storyline. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Saint of Killers has been a little bit of a flop in this show. Not entirely. I think early on he was pretty cool to have, and I think in the way that in the comic book he functions as sort of just like background noise that pops up from time to time, but he's not like an eternal thing that in every single issue of the book is always just there. I think they've made a little bit of a mistake with him in this show. Yeah, that he's
they made it a little too difficult on themselves in trying to include him because he is an important part of the story.
Yeah.
But like you said, he is much more of a background ongoing thing, whereas they made him like a... a reoccurring constant problem that they have to deal with.
It's like they're always running from the Saint, and it's not to drive the story that's a problem, but it's like you said, an energy killer. I feel like at this point the Saint of Killers is a massive energy killer, and what the biggest issue with this episode for me was that when push comes to shove, even though the Grail orchestrated it, the idea that he's about to, he's basically the most strongest guy in the world, that he can hit you and you fly across the room. It's like, okay, Tulip's face is shattered. Jesse's face is shattered. Like, these people are all dead now. But, like, it's a TV show and they're super strong, so they're not going to let that happen. But then Hell is just like, we're taking you back. And that's the end of the story? It was just like, that. What a letdown. What a massive letdown for that character. To me, that was the biggest problem with this episode. Was just like, what? Agreed.
Well, and again, it really... the word is emasculates, that's coming to my head, but I'm thinking eheroates or whatever. That's not a real word. But, like, again, with Jesse, it's like, at first when that started, I was like, okay, awesome. Are we going to get, like, a good, like, Jesse, Saint of All Killers fight here? Like, a good fight?
Yeah.
Because it's been a while, I feel like, since we saw a good fight. Great. And, because even when Tulip, like, give props to Tulip in that. Like, Tulip's been kind of like a wet blanket stuck in fear. And I really loved how that character was, like, she like faced her fear and she was like, get away from him, and kind of like tried.
Just went after him.
Yeah, I love that. And so, again, it was a little bit like, right when I felt like we were just starting to get into like a good fight, it was like, nope. And like you said, it was, I thought Jesse was going to figure out something. And then all of a sudden, Warden Hale appears, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
It just was a little, but when you think about it too, the Saint of All Killers, how exciting is he? Like, all he does is literally just walk and kill people. You know what I mean? So it's like that's the way they built him in the TV show.
It just like that when that happened with Hell coming to get him was, I think that was the biggest moment for me when we talk about wrapping up a storyline and feeling like this episode was the bridge. That was just like, okay, so that's what you need to tie off this threat and to get Jesse to this next place that you guys want to show us in the next episode.
And did they get him because Hitler and Arseface, I forgot, it just went blank. Did they get him because they're out of Hell now? Is it because there's a space?
No, the implication is that the whole thing was set up by Hairstar to convince Jesse to join them.
Okay.
So that, like, that's why she says at the end, you know, it's just a whole bit, it's just a big intimidation tactic of, like, you know, if Hairstar was on your side, you and all these people would be dead. So you better join up.
So then, speaking of Hell and Eugene and Hitler and that storyline, that's another one where I was just like, I think that there's some
nothing really happened.
This show is fascinated with this idea of Hell, your own personal Hell, and showing you the same scene over and over again. But it's like, I only want to see that so many episodes. Like that scene with Eugene and Tracy, at this point it's like, I feel like I've seen it so many times now where I'm like, what's the original one even like? Like, what was the Hell memory? And now I'm just like,
I made this thing. I was like, I wonder if we could contact the actress and have her on. I would love to interview her. Like, what was it like just playing the same scene over and over and over?
Right. And then also, they're trying to prove that Eugene's like good. That's how the door opens, and that's how he gets out. They're trying to show that he's like balanced, right? That's what that scene's about. But I found it confusing because, like, I didn't understand why each thing he did was, like, a good thing. Like, standing up for himself and saying, like, it wasn't his fault.
But so, then it was, like, again, like, when's the last time we saw, like, the mascot guy? That was, like, in season one.
Seriously.
So many episodes ago. So, again, I felt like a little bit like the writers were, like, maybe got a little high and were like, hey, what happened, like, a year ago? And just kind of pulled it out because it was like, okay, you, with, you know, you, it's not your fault that you killed yourself. Oh, and you were abused. Let's shoot him. Okay, yeah. And now your dad's here. He loves you. It was just so much of a nice bow of all this coming together. And I just feel like there could have been a way more interesting way of just trying to get out of hell. And then what was odd is that that's the way it starts. And then immediately it flashes to this Saint of All Killers, you know? And then we didn't really see any of that until at the end when they're crawling out of hell. So it's like they were trying to connect these things, you know, because we've seen episodes of shows where there's a lot of different storylines, a lot of different characters. But usually there is, I mean, there's some type of continuity of a theme. Either each character is struggling kind of with the same moral choice or they're having a kind of a similar evolution. So you feel that they're all connected. And I feel like that's, for me, the overarching, as if I'm getting all nerdy, which is what we do here, is that there was no, in the story, there was no connected theme of all these characters that connected their process.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. So here was my other question. Did you guys think when he's like, there's one more, that Eugene was going to kill Hitler? Because I was like, that's got to be the move. He's holding the shotgun.
Ah.
I was like, and he's like, there's one more thing to open the door to show that you're good. You shoot Hitler, the door opens, and you escape heaven. I was like, that wraps the story up. Instead, they're like,
I kind of would have enjoyed that, actually.
Show your dad. You wouldn't like that.
I mean, I can see why you thought they might have been going that way. But then my question, if that happened, is it just doesn't make any sense.
Because he's a murderer?
Well, it also has nothing to do with Eugene. Like, in reality, he doesn't know Hitler until he got to hell. So it wouldn't have any bearing on his personal hell. At least it shouldn't.
I'm not necessarily saying he should have done that. Right. I just assumed that was what they were setting up. Because now, again, they're like, if they get out of hell together, I'm like, what are you guys going to do? Now you're going to have Hitler in the world?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess that's fun and funny, kind of.
I don't know if it. I have a feeling in the end that the Hitler storyline is still going to be resolved in some way in the finale.
Yeah, next week.
And I have a feeling that we're going to get a merging of the storylines too, especially because they seem to push so hard to finally wrap that up this episode and push it into a place of where he could pop up somewhere with Jesse. I don't know, but you're right in that it was strange how they showed it. I liked the progression of it, and then it got kind of weird. And like, I didn't see the dad thing coming, but even then, it was still weird. And then they cut away, and the only other time we see them is when they're crawling through the ducks, and they of course hear the Saints thing because we have to rehear that again.
Right.
In fact, it would have been fine, I think, if they got out of hell because he finally told her that he wasn't his fault. And like to me, I felt they really gilded the lily. Like, that was enough.
Yeah.
You could have done that. We didn't need the dad stuff. We didn't need the mascot stuff. And just let us have that, and then they get out.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But, I mean, I also like that it's not just that easy to get out of hell, too. And that, like, it went, like the first time that he tries when and then she still blows her head off. Like, there's, it's more than just, like, oh, yeah, I'm a good person, I swear. Like, I like that there's a couple tests that really want to make sure. I don't want to let the wrong person out, of course.
And then they let Hitler out. So let's talk about a few other things. First of all, when they come to get the saint and they say William, they say his name, they say God is gone. That, you know, who would stop us if we pulled your daughter and your wife into hell? So Jesse knew God was gone, but hearing hell say that, like, we can do whatever we want because God's gone. Do you think that's a major motivator for him to go work for Star?
Probably, especially also the implication that Hell's hierarchy has some type of a tie to Hare Star and the Grail. I think is probably a big thing too. That probably has a lot to do with why he made that decision.
Okay, in the apartment, the thing they kept showing, the camera on the hinge that eventually falls down.
Thank you. I was going to bring that up. Yeah.
So is that the Grail's camera that they've been watching the whole time with?
Yeah.
And it was a big deal that it fell. Why?
I think we're supposed to find that because they showed it again. It fell towards the end of the episode. So I feel like maybe that's going to be something. I hope that maybe Tulip finds that kind of leads Tulip. I would enjoy like a, a tulip featherstone kind of confrontation or even fight, like, or something.
I feel like they were out of the apartment when it fell, though, right?
And what happens in the room when it falls? Because doesn't it fall?
They shut the door to go eat.
So it falls after they leave?
Yeah.
I thought it was during when the saint is in there.
No, it got knocked off and like went.
Yeah.
It didn't make that noise. But it kind of went. Yeah. And it kind of like was dangling. And then when he shut the door to go eat, it was.
Because my thought was, okay, so it falls and Featherstone and Hoover are in the next room.
Just go get it.
And then they'll just go put it back on.
Because Featherstone's freaking on it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, it's weird that they would show it when they leave the room. Because they would immediately notice, I'm guessing.
And also, too, another thing, maybe somebody in the chat, if y'all didn't know, what were the plans that Hoover was looking at when he was in the van and highlighting them?
I couldn't figure that out.
I have no idea what that was.
Yeah.
So I was interested to see.
Probably foreshadowing for something for the finale.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I did like when Hoover is on the radio with the saint. How are you?
Yeah. That was great. That was great.
Yeah, but I mean, I agree with what you're saying earlier about the saint, too, because just the idea of, like, the comic book saint character being trapped in, like, an armored car.
Yeah.
Is just, it just seems ridiculous. Like, guns are not. Like, it just.
Like, I thought he was in a van with a bunch of souls. So this is somebody who, like, wants to go to, like, and they kept showing them, like, kind of shaking. So I kind of thought he was going to, like, again, like, figure something out and, like, or take some souls or, like, do soul shots or something. And it would, like, I don't know, change him.
Been awesome.
Soul shots. I think that would have, like, let's make this guy. But, no, he kind of, like, it's a Saint of All Killers. So he stays on his course. He just hits the wall.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is to the detriment of this character because he doesn't – we need him to veer.
I was also thinking, too, that they were going to, like, pull Jesse's soul out of him or something in order to, like, restore him to full strength or something.
Something. Well, Jesse's voice –
we didn't really get
– his voice didn't work again.
Well, but I don't know if it – it seemed like it didn't work because of the reason that it didn't work at the Grail.
Right.
Not like it didn't work before because he didn't have a soul.
No. It shorted out.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if that's something the Grail did or if that's Jesse now veering from the person who he was and, like, becoming sort of evil. Mm-hmm. And because he's becoming, like, not a good dude,
or even just not in the gray anymore. He's, like, choosing one side over the other or something.
He's becoming too distinctly one way or another way or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what I had to assume was happening.
Could go either way, though, because it would very much benefit the Grail for him to not be able to use the voice to control the saint, because then the whole setup is pointless.
Well, he's pointless. He's pointless and irrelevant to the Grail if the voice doesn't work.
No, I'm saying if he can use the voice on the saint, then there's no, well, thank God Hairstar is your friend to help us collect the saint and get him out of here, because otherwise there's no threat. He just makes him kneel down again and gets him to go, you know, screw off and go to something else.
Anybody in the chat have any ideas why his voice isn't working? Is it the Grail that did it? Or
I feel like we needed more. They put that tease at the end of last week, and then we didn't get any Grail at all until the Saint of All Killers. So I think it almost seems like it's like they so far wrote this whole season, and then, like, they had this episode planned, like, eight episodes ago, and they had already written it. You know what I mean? It just didn't feel like it picked it. It just didn't keep the momentum going of some things.
Yeah, it didn't feel like it was riding the wave of awesome. So they mention here in the chat here, a couple different people are talking about Satan and the conversation that the saint is going to have with Satan. So that's at least something interesting.
That was interesting, yes.
With the
yes,
saint.
That was great.
That's a piece of information that we needed to hear, and I definitely am excited. I'm definitely excited to see that conversation. Because it could, if Satan becomes a part of the story, it could make the saint a much more interesting character.
Yes.
It's like, if we have that, you know, God's gone, but if Satan is playing his hand or something, maybe that's going to motivate Jesse to find God even more. Mm. Something. I don't know.
And I think Satan would be a good potential foil to Hairstar. I feel like probably, you know, because if at least as far as end games, I mean, I don't know Satan's end game. We're not friends, but I would imagine, you know, I have my red hair. That's what they were, fire kids or whatever. Satan and Hairstar does want the Messiah. Like, he does want that, which is, I imagine, not what Satan wants at all.
Right.
So anyway, I'm just interested to see. That was super interesting. They're like little dangly nuggets. I mean, but, you know, I have to preface and say, like, it's we just love this show so much. And so I've really enjoyed this season so much. And so it's been, and also now that I'm like quarter into the comics and reading them like with y'all too, like it really, this season, I can see the difference that it really captures what I love about the comic. And so so anyway, I just want to tell people, like, I'm interested in what, you know, what people in the chat, if they feel the same way. Sorry if you loved it, you know, but you know, close to the heart.
Yeah, I just had really high expectations from last week. And
just in the last five, I thought the second half of the season had hit its stride so completely. I was just like all in, so excited. I felt like the humor was great. But this
could be the calm before the storm.
Yeah, it could too. Be. So let's talk a little bit about Dennis. Last week's episode, we had basically a confrontation between Cass and Dennis where he was like, put the dog down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it sort of felt like he was parenting Dennis. It didn't feel like he was parenting him in that moment. It felt like I'm realizing you are a villainous creature.
It seemed like he was over him.
And I need to kill you.
Yeah.
Or I need to, like. But then this episode, it kind of went back to just him, like, parenting his disobedient son.
I mean, but he hid the dog from him.
Yeah.
Dennis is going to die. If you're going to kill puppies, you're dead. I don't know any show even that's like, you know. But also, too, I'm trying to remember when Dennis ended up, because Jesse said he was unconscious, I gave him blood, but his neck was weird.
Yeah, well, he's just...
do we see Dennis in the next week?
No, but he was, like, lying there on the side of
the
bed.
So I wonder if he's
like...
dead. No. He can't be, right?
Well, he said he was sleeping. He said he gave him...
I know, he said his neck. I don't know. That neck thing weird.
He said he gave him blood, and he... I think the idea is just that he... It looked like the saint roughed him up.
Broke his neck.
He probably just thought he was just some old man and just grabbed him and snapped his neck and tossed him on the ground.
Yeah.
Which doesn't kill him because he's a vampire.
Because he's a vampire,
but probably still hurt.
Yeah, definitely what it seemed like.
Yeah. He just needs some medicine.
So the last thing to talk about, I suppose, is probably that the Pope goes and makes this announcement that there is a god or some sort of god replacement coming. Mm-hmm. And Jesse...
Well, first, just the Pope announcing the God is gone is pretty big.
Huge.
You know, even before he goes to say, don't worry, it's okay, there's something else that's coming instead. But that's still pretty massive.
I mean, but
the Pope.
What I also thought was smart, this I liked about the writing, is that he did and he didn't. He actually said, as someone, again, you know, we've talked about this show. Again, I'm not religious at all. I'm recovering Catholic. But, so I probably shouldn't say this about the Pope. My mother will kill me. But, but, the Pope was kind of saying the BS that a lot of like God is gone from our hearts.
Oh, sure.
So that's what I actually liked about it, is that it had he was really saying a lot of the same script that you hear from religious people.
Yeah.
But because of what we know,
he really
was talking like truthfully, like God is gone. But these people hearing this, I don't think heard it that way. They were just kind of hearing the same mumbo jumbo. I thought that was smart. So I don't think there's like a, I don't think the world is thinking the Messiah is going to come, though, anytime soon. I think it's just that was for us to hear.
Totally. So then the last thing is, after this announcement happens, we see Jesse in Star's office. And he says, what now? And Star just kneels down and puts Jesse's hand on his head.
Well, I totally thought there was going to be something.
In the comic, it probably would have been.
Yeah.
Don't forget about Hairstar's meeting with Tulip and
Cassidy?
And Cassidy earlier.
Yeah, which is funny.
The way they did that, and then just Cassidy's, he's just going on and on about how ugly he is. Just classic Cassidy.
Fantastic.
Yeah. It's pretty pretty manipulative, though, for him to pull them in in order to give them the information first so he can spin it his way, as opposed to having confused Jesse try to explain it in some way to them. Very, very smart by Hairstar. I like that. I mean, they may have kind of ruined the saint with this season, but Hairstar is, there's again, knocking
I
out
just
of the
want
park.
Him all the time.
He is so methodical and like...
What we've been saying all season, I just believe so completely, which is like, that's the thing that made this season great. It was good. They got a lot of the humor. They understood the characters better. But Hairstar and the Grail and their execution of him as the guy leading the Grail is just what is great about this show. And it's so, like, this show is, I think, underrated now for that reason. I think people are not aware of how good of a character he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we're lucky, because without that casting, without that brilliant piece of casting and how great it's been, I think this show wouldn't have made it to a third season.
Agreed.
I agree. I agree with that. I mean, that's why Batman's so great. Batman has the best villains. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
What? No, nothing. You don't agree with that?
I That's another day.
Who's got the best villains? You have an opinion.
That was actually not
any Marvel comic has better villains than.
That's not true. Batman has the best villains.
Oh wow. We're not talking about this.
Okay, fair enough. It's true.
It's not true, but that's okay.
Any Marvel, your statement, any Marvel okay. comic.
Yes. Yeah. Anyone. Even the worst, I'm so sorry. The worst one.
That's
no, not the worst one.
Dave Child is watching this screaming somewhere.
You're telling me that like Red Skull and Baron Zemo are better villains than Batman's
yes.
villains?
Yes.
Joker's better than Red Skull.
Oh, no, I don't agree with that.
Joker is better than Red Skull and Baron for nothing Zemo to do with Batman.
Yeah, but that's not what we're talking about. Batman has the best villains. Joker is the best villain ever.
No. Magneto, Thanos, Doctor Doom? No.
Doctor Doom
Galactus?
Is really good.
No.
Varying opinions.
But
we're not talking about this. We're talking about Preacher.
It's a comic book show.
You're going to hurt my feelings.
Anyway.
I mean, the Pharaoh? That one's a great villain. I'm kidding. I'm sorry.
Get out of here. All right. So where were we, guys? I think that pretty much...
Yeah, Penguin.
Yeah. Wrapping up. Star on his knee with, you know, basically bowing to Jesse and Jesse seeming to accept it.
Yeah.
This was not a direction I expected this episode to go. Mm-hmm. I really...
Like, this was like none of our predictions were right at all.
And I think it's probably, honestly, because it happened, it's probably worth us going to predictions right now and doing comic book wrap-up, because I think this is a situation we're talking about that's very relevant.
Yeah.
So let's get into it, guys. We're going to do predictions right now.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
And then we...
Thank you, Ivan. Thank you, Ivan Soto, for our...
Don't put fuel on the fire.
And then you get me in a different form. I'll happily talk about this.
I will happily talk about it also.
You know that I'm like a legitimate comic book fan, right?
Yeah, I know. Okay. And I have respect Batman. Good, it's good, just good. Inferior.
So let's talk about predictions, basic predictions, and then we're going to do spoiler predictions, guys, which are going to be comic book-related discussion. So let's do a sign-off and a prediction. We'll get to that. Matt, what do you got?
I honestly, this is... I don't know what the hell is going to happen after this episode. I'm really, I'm just trying to kind of figure this out. I'm going to pick one thing because there were so many like things thrown at us. I think they are going to have Jesse kind of come to his senses in some way of next episode. But I feel like for Cassidy and Tulip, it'll be too late. That's kind of weird. That's my prediction with that. And I'm Matt Maher. The Matt Maher. I'm Dave Child. I'm kidding. I'm
A similar thing. I'm not sure what's going to happen, but I'm pretty sure the end of this episode and the majority of this episode was just a big misdirect. I don't think that Jesse's going to be with the Grail for a long time. I don't think he's really going to go fall onto the Messiah thing. I think part of the season finale is going to be something backfiring from Hairstar's plan or some regard, or maybe they find the camera and then they figure out that they've been plotting this whole thing, because we still haven't got the resolution of Tulip figuring out who Featherstone is.
Exactly. Yep.
So there's still more there. So definitely I think we're going to see that flip. I'm hoping it ends with that failing. We get him splitting off to, you know, fight against the Grail, whatever, in his own way. And then I'm thinking that in the middle of all the chaos and stuff that's going on, Jesse's family is going to, like, come in and, like, swoop in.
You think that's next episode?
I think so. I think they're just going to, like, take him away. I don't know if they take him in Tulip. I'm not sure how that's going to
happen. Yeah, because it got a little bit of that flashback and then nothing.
Right.
But I think it would make sense as they kind of wrap this season up for them to introduce them right at the end as like a foil to whatever is going on.
Yeah, I would agree. Mm-hmm. I think next week's episode is going to be a big... I think you're right, and I think that there's going to be a big gesture on Jesse's part to... So this is what I think will happen. I think that Cassidy and Tulip are going to see Jesse go with the Grail, and that's going to be what they believe. And that's their last impression of Jesse before he goes away. And then I think Jesse is going to turn away from the Grail, and I think he's going to tell him to F off, but Cassidy and Tulip aren't going to be there to see it. And they're going to go do their own thing. And I think it does feel a little bit like the show is starting to borrow bits and pieces from different parts of the story. And I think we're going to see a little bit of that split that happens later. I think we'll get it a little earlier. So let's, with that being said, guys, Ben Bateman Media, you guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram. We're going to get into a spoiler discussion right now, guys, comic book related. So very specific here. If you don't want to hear, let's throw a spoiler alert up real quick.
Spoiler alert.
So last chance, guys. Turn off the iPhones, the iPads, the YouTube, the everything. Stop listening if you don't want to hear comic book spoilers. And 3, 2, 1. So, yeah, I think the big thing that happens that I'm talking about, the split, which is later when, you know, the big fight in the War in the Sun storyline with the nuke and everything. Like, I think we're going to get the version of that story now. I think that Tulip and Cassidy, it's not going to be as intense, but I think they're going to go off on an adventure themselves, and it's something bad will happen. Like, they'll hook up or kind of, and Jesse's going to go and do his thing. And I do think that next season, I wouldn't be surprised if Tulip isn't there experiencing stuff with the family. I think that it's going to be the family is the first half of next season, and the Grail storyline is the other half.
So you feel like it's going to be two, like, Tulip and Jesse aren't even going to be in the same planes. Like, they're going to be doing on their own kind of separate adventures.
For a portion of the season, yeah. I think they split up at the end of next week.
I just don't know if that storyline is going to make sense without them being under those pretenses that they're in the comic book. Like, just knowing that he's off away doing something else and they're separate, I don't know if that's going to be enough character motivation for what follows that. You know what I mean?
You could be right. They could just, again, the three of them could just leave New Orleans and just be on the run after next week, and that's and then. But I do think that the family stuff's going to happen. I have a feeling.
I agree also. And they've got to figure out some way what's going to happen with Cassidy while it happens too. So maybe because we still really haven't got much resolution with Dennis. They might wrap it up in the finale too to throw it in to be a real mixed pot.
Totally.
They could also drag it out.
Yep. So that's my thought, guys. That is what I'm expecting. I do think that Jesse is going to go to be with the Grail, and I think we're going to start to see the Masada and like that whole story. I think we're going to see some of that, whether it's the first half of next season or next week it starts.
I think it's going to start next week.
Yeah, but I think he is going to go to Masada. We're going to meet the Allfather. I think all that's going to happen. It's just a question of when the meat of that storyline is going to take place. It'll be first or second half of next season.
Yeah, I think we'll get a lot of the setup and stuff this season, and it'll seem like it's going to go right into it. And then out of nowhere, the family's going to come in, and that's going to be our cliffhanger into 3. And then, like you said, later in the second half, season into 3, we'll get back into the Grail stuff and find out what Hushnar has been up to.
That's what I think, too.
Yeah.
Cool. I think that Dr. Doom is going to come and fight Thanos.
don't start.
I think, look, to
Victor Von Doom.
People aren't listening, so this is what I'll say about that, is that the one difference between, like when you have this argument, is that we now have so many years and different retelling
different
story
writers.
And not only that, but, like, having this conversation 15 years ago was different, because now you have the most popularized version of each of these characters that exists associated with an actor and the storyline in that movie.
Right.
There's terrible Doom storylines. There's also great Doom storylines. Yes. There's awesome Joker storylines, and there's also tons of horrible ones.
No, Doctor Doom is that's been my biggest, like, always let down that guts me, is that Doctor Doom is one of the best written villains, and he's the most terrible on screen.
Yeah,
my big argument for Marvel villains over DC villains is the same reason for my overall argument for Marvel over DC. It's just that in my experience, and I've read a lot of DC books also, the Marvel characters from villains and the heroes are just more humanistic in that they have flaws.
Well, they're written that
they
way,
have strengths, and they have...
That was the whole point of them.
They're balanced. Whereas when you look at DC heroes and villains, the heroes are super uptight, perfect heroes, not generalizing, and the villains are just super evil, evil villains. Victor Von Doom is incredibly evil and powerful, but he does what he does because he truly believes that if he was the supreme leader of the world, it would be a better place.
Yeah, but like the good telling, like the good tellings of Ra's al Ghul and the good tellings of like of Mr. Freeze and Bane, those are great villains.
Yes.
They're just when they're told the right way.
I think it's also a preference though too, because I understand that, but also the Joker does not make sense to me, and I kind of love that his nemesis is someone where everything has to make sense for him. And it's for somebody, for me, things have to make sense for me. I'm a freaking therapist. I like to figure out people. The Joker does not make sense for me. And that's exciting for me because I don't know what the hell he's going
to
do.
Well, you've also got to look at, too, the inception of the characters again. Because, like, there are a few Dark Knight Batman books that I really enjoy.
Yep.
And I do like Joker a lot after I read Killing Joke, after I read, you know, Dark Knight Returns, after a lot of the Frank Miller changing of the character, making the Joker much more darker as it was, and in my opinion, making it much more Marvel-like, giving him feelings, giving him a reason to be crazy, to have these ideas and stuff that he does. The whole dynamic between that book, Killing Joke, the idea of the hero and villain pairing, that without Joker there is no Batman, without Batman there is no Joker, to me that is beautiful. But that's not something that comes from the Batman mythos naturally. I feel like that was something they were like, ooh, these characters would really great if we added this in.
I mean, look, dude, I'm just going to tell you somebody, and this will be the last point because you got to get off the air, but like, Iron Man was my guy growing up. He's my favorite character. I've got every book from Tales of Suspense 39 all the way through the last one I bought was in 05, but I have all of them. I've read them all, and he was my guy. Iron Man has horrible villains.
Correct.
He's a bad character.
Correct.
He doesn't have good villains. Correct. And like a lot of Marvel characters in the 70s and the 60s were like that. The Correct. Argument you make there about Joker, you can really make a similar argument about a lot of the best characters because they only really got serious about storytelling in the way that it was directed towards an adult narrative in the 80s and the 90s right. and the 2000s.
Which is about the same time that DC made the same shift also.
Yeah, and DC like got way better in the 2000s. Like when Geoff Johns took over, like most of the books got better. Like most of the last 10 to 15 years of DC has been way better than all the stuff in the 70s.
I would say the last 10 years, I would vehemently disagree with the last 15 years for those because those last 5 years with the new 52
as I don't read it anymore.
Yeah,
well, right. We gotta get off here. Thanks okay. for listening, guys. Have a
sorry,
good
one. Sorry,
we're up there. Batman stuff. Bye, guys.
At the end, do we say buzz you later? Or did we just?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know if the buzz you later still exists. Do we still do?
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.